Our reading then this morning, it's from Genesis 22. 28 even, Genesis 28. So we are going to see an incident in the life of Jacob. Jacob's important because the other name of Jacob, of course, was Israel. And this is early, I suppose, before he has 12 sons. He's had to escape, flee for his life. And he reaches a place. Genesis 28, verse 10. I'm going to start off there. This is what it says. It says, Jacob left Beersheba and set out for Haran. When he reached a certain place, he stopped for the night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones there, he put it under his head and lay down to sleep. He had a dream in which he saw a stairway resting on earth with its top reaching to heaven, and the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. There above it stood the Lord, and he said, I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will be spread out to the west and to the east, to the north and to the south. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. I am with you and will watch over you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. When Jacob awoke from his sleep, he thought, surely the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware of it. He was afraid and said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven. Well, it's just a small incident, I guess a fairly well-known incident from the life of Jacob. It's well-known because of the paintings, I suppose, of Jacob's dream, Jacob's ladder. It features in all sorts of different things, doesn't it? But this morning, we're thinking about this dream, I suppose, this sense that Jacob was on a journey, had reached nowhere special, and yet encountered God. So thinking this morning that God is closer than you think. There's a famous painting that was painted by Michelangelo in 1512. It's actually a series of paintings, a fresco that was painted on the walls of the Sistine Chapel in the Vatican. The work, of course, is today still a masterpiece all these years later, and it went on to change the course of Western art. Its sheer beauty and sheer scale gave it a stature unlike anything that had ever been painted before. One of the panels on the ceiling is famous because it's known as the Creation of Adam. There it is there. That's the version for our Baptist church this morning anyway. And it depicts God's hand reaching out to Adam's hand. However, they don't touch, as you can see, and they almost seem to touch. It's almost like there's a hair's breadth of a gap between them. The near-touching fingers of God and Adam has become an almost iconic image, hasn't it? In the wider picture, God is portrayed as reaching out to Adam with the full length of his arm. You can see in his face the effort that is involved in trying to reach out to Adam. You get the impression that God is literally at full strength with his arm. If you ever tried to reach your child or something in the swimming pool or something, you'll know what that feeling can be like. You're trying as hard as you can, but your child isn't perhaps all that worried about it, because Adam seems to be fairly relaxed about this whole thing. God may be reaching out, but Adam is fairly, well, almost indifferent. He's less committed to the embrace of his Creator than his Creator is to him. It's almost in a sense in that picture that Adam only needs to lift his finger a little bit and he'd be touching God. It seems as though God is almost saying in that picture, I'm here. All you need to do is lift your finger a little bit because I'm right here. Could it be this morning that God is close to us? Could it be this morning that we are in danger of missing out how close God is to us because we just don't make that tiny little bit of effort that is required? God is closer than we think. Many of us, and I have to say I'm guilty of this as well, we live much of our lives with a sense that God is remote, God is distant. We say to ourselves, God is up there. We pray the prayer that Jesus taught us, our Father in heaven, and we think, well, heaven is up there, and it's distant. We know from NASA and other people who've gone into space that space is vast and huge. No one has ever reached heaven. We've got no idea how far away that location would be, even if it is a specific location. So God is up there looking down. Therefore, God is a considerable distance away. And here we are, down here on earth, living our lives, aware that God is there, but not aware of how close God is. You might be thinking, well, does that really matter? I mean, Jesus said, our Father in heaven, does it really matter if God feels distant and elsewhere? And I would say, yes, it does. Because if we believe God is somewhere else, that God is distant, if not remote, then that has all sorts of implications about the way we act towards God and the way we relate to one another. You see, if God is remote, if God is up there in the distant heavens, then we will try to do the minimum required to meet God's standards. When it comes to faith and living as God intended, we'll say, well, God's away out there. He can't see every detail when he's that far away. So I'm just going to stick to doing the minimum when it comes to faith. I'll come to church as often as is decent, unless there's a better opportunity. I'll come to small groups if and when it takes my whim. I'll listen to the preacher if he's speaking about something that I like. I'll give money if it's being used the way I think it should be used. If God is remote, then does it really matter if we let a few things slip away in the way we treat people we know and the way we treat people we don't know? If God is remote, up in the heavenly somewhere, then what I believe about God can feel very disconnected to the challenges I face in my day-to-day life. But what about this? What if this morning God is closer than we think? Much closer than we think. To help our thoughts, we're going to pick out this incident from Jacob's life. Before we get to this incident, though, perhaps we ought to fill in a few of the gaps, of which there may be one or two this morning. First of all, who is Jacob? Jacob is, I don't know how you describe his character. I suppose you might call it a bit of a character, wouldn't you? His grandfather, though interesting it's his father here, but this is the whole Father Abraham thing. His grandfather goes by the name of Abram or Abraham. If we were to go into his grandfather's story then, we'd say that one day God called Abram and gave him an incredible promise. It's back there, Genesis 12, isn't it? But that promise is really quite amazing. God says to Abraham, I will make you into a great nation. And I will bless you. And I will make your name great. And you will be a blessing, and I will bless those who bless you. And whoever curses you, I will curse. And all peoples on earth will be blessed through you. Well, we know, if we do know something of the story of Abraham and his wife Sarah, then we'll know they have a child called Isaac. To cut a long story short, Isaac marries Rebecca. Rebecca gives birth to twins, Esau and Jacob. Esau was Isaac's older son, just obviously being twins, but one came first. And according to tradition, the older son, even if it was just by seconds or minutes, the older son would inherit the blessing of the father. Are we all kind of together so far? So Abraham has this promise, passes to Isaac. Isaac has two children. First one should inherit the blessing. So the blessing God gave Abraham passes to Isaac, should pass to Esau. Jacob effectively cheats Isaac, pretending that he's Esau, when Isaac is ready to give his blessing, pass it on to the eldest son, and Jacob gets the blessing that was due to Esau. And you're always saying, especially if we're from this nation here, you're saying, well, that's just stupid, isn't it? What a stupid tradition that is. Well, they had to keep some order in society, so giving it to the elders kind of kept the order. Then you say, well, if the old man, which he was at this point, makes a mistake, blesses the wrong son, what does it matter? Well, it matters, because they say, well, my blessing can't be revoked. Jacob, you have now got the blessing that Esau should have had. Jacob is forced to flee. As we can imagine, his slightly elder sibling is not going to take this well at all. But before he went, Isaac calls for Jacob and blessed him. Genesis 28, verse 3. He blesses him, saying, God Almighty, bless you and make you fruitful and increase your numbers until you become a community of peoples. May he give you and your descendants the blessing given to Abraham so that you may take possession of the land where you now reside as a foreigner, the land God gave to Abraham. Isn't that amazing? This is the promise of how Israel came about and how ultimately we come about as Christians, as followers of Jesus today. God uses some unlikely people. Abraham for a start, and then Isaac, and Isaac passes it on, and Jacob gets it. And who's Jacob? Well, the best we can say is that he's a thief. He's stolen someone else's birthright. He's a liar. He didn't tell the truth. And now he is forced to flee for his life. And then we come to verse 10. Jacob leaves home and ends up in what can only be described as a certain place. It's interesting, isn't it? Where is Jacob? Location isn't mentioned, but he stops somewhere. It's not mentioned because actually the specific location isn't that important. What's being said by the writer here is that Jacob is effectively nowhere special. I wonder, what about you? What about us this morning? Where do we spend most of our time, most of our energy? Nowhere special. It's familiar territory to us, but probably unknown to many beyond our immediate circle. It's a place where we work. Nothing too special. It's a place where our children go to school, or we are at home, or we live alongside our neighbors. It's a place where we go about doing what we simply have to go about doing. Wherever you pass your time, wherever that nowhere special is for you or for me, this morning is where Jacob finds himself. Nowhere special. Unnamed. Unknown. Welcome to the ordinary, where the extraordinary with God can happen. Well, as Vic and I said this morning, next week we're joining with our other Baptist churches and the Baptist family at the Hexagon in Reading. I don't know if you've been to the Hexagon. I suspect you have. We popped in just on Friday morning there, just to have a look around. Wow, if anywhere looked like nowhere special, that's the Hexagon. They put a real effort into making it look bad around there, haven't they? I mean, it just doesn't, that don't happen naturally. It's never going to win an award for being pretty, or maybe it did, but in a time when pretty was judged differently. Anyway, we're gathering in nowhere special for a reason. There's a practical reason. We haven't got anywhere else that will fit us. Even at 600, I think that'll go up a bit. There ain't really a venue that could take us. But we're doing there because we believe God's got three key things that he wants to explore together with us. We're calling it pioneering, but you might also say planting new churches, which is something the Baptist family in the Reading area has done historically. Pioneering or doing something new within our existing churches, which is something we ought to be doing in terms of mission. And dreams, unpacking in our lives the vision or dream God's got in store for us. So as I mentioned that, already some of us are putting a ruler through that statement going, well, that doesn't refer to me. I can't ever see myself, you're saying, being involved in planting a new church congregation. You rule yourself out of that one. You think, well, I can't do anything new in terms of mission or helping people come to faith in Jesus, so you rule yourself out of that one. And then you say, well, when it comes to dreams, that's just strange talk, because God doesn't give me dreams. Well, not any that I'd share publicly that make any sense. So you score yourself out. You see, it's not just location that's the problem for Jacob this morning, is it? It's also who we feel we are. God may feel distant, not just because of our location, but because of us. We say, I'm no one special who lives in nowhere special. The sun is setting. So Jacob grabs a large stone, we're told, and puts it under his head to go to sleep. He's obviously booked with the hotels.com as well before. Cheap, but cheerless. And while he's sleeping, he has a dream in which he sees a set of stairs coming down from heaven and resting on earth. In his dream, the stairs already have angels climbing up and down them. And there at the top of the stairs is God himself, who announces to Jacob a new promise of provision. We're on verse 15. God says, I'm with you and will watch over you wherever you go. And I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. That's an amazing statement to Jacob, isn't it? And I think it's a statement for each of us here this morning as well. I wonder if you've ever had conversations like this. I hope it's not just me who's had this kind of conversation. You know, you're speaking to someone, you've not met them before, and they say, where are you from? Oh, that's... I go Reading. And you can already tell I'm apologizing. It's like I'm saying to people, I'm awful sorry. I know I live in Reading. I know it's not as exciting as London, which is just down the road. I know it's not as royal as Windsor, which is also just down the road, and clearly not as clever as Oxford. And then the conversation goes, well, where in Reading do you live? And I'm like, Lower Early. It's almost like I'm saying, I'm really sorry, you'll have never heard of Lower Early, will you? And they go, where? I go, well, it's like it's beside the M4. And it's like, you know, who would want to live beside the M4 out of choice, really? I mean, it's almost like I'm saying to them, I'm really sorry. You know I could have done much better. I could have, for instance, chosen the M40 or the M42 or maybe even the M3. But no, I got Lower Early on the M4. And then if the question is directed at me, and obviously your answer to this one will be different. What do you do in Lower Early? And this is, I just like, I'm very good at muttering, as you know, I just go, But something, they go, pardon, it sounds to me like you are the minister of Lower Early Baptist Church. I'm just like, you know, I'm absolutely no one special from nowhere special. That's why I don't particularly like going to these kind of Baptist conferences. You know, because you always meet the one who's like started, you know, 10 churches before they got up that morning. Let's face it, you know, why would God turn up in my nowhere special? I'm no one special. And I live in nowhere special. You know, God might do amazing things in cities. Pick your city. God might do amazing things in other church denominations. Pick your denomination. God has the whole world at his fingertips. We know this because he's God of the universe. And if you had the whole world at your fingertips, would you turn up here for us? But that's the incredible thing this morning, isn't it? Of course God would. That's why he turns up for Jacob. This is the amazing thing. God says to Jacob, no one special, in nowhere special, I am the Lord, I am with you, I will not leave you. And that's exactly what he says to me this morning, or you this morning. I am the Lord, I am with you, I will not leave you. So when you turn up the hexagon next week, or I turn up, there's no need to be embarrassed or ashamed that we come from the M4. So what? God is with us. He will not leave us. And the plan that Jacob would see fulfilled through his life, God has a plan for our life that he'll see fulfilled too. How often, though, like Jacob, do we find ourselves nowhere special and not realize God is there? God is there, we didn't know it. Jacob wakes up and declares, surely God was in this place, and I didn't know it. Do you know, there's more than just a story there this morning, isn't there? Maybe that's the way we've been kind of living. We just thought, oh, no, we're special. And there's no amazing testimony or story from me about how God's worked in my life. It's never going to happen. In which case, I think God's saying to us, you know, we need to wake up. We need to appreciate again that God is God. He is with us, and he will not leave us. God is here for us today. He's here for us, whether you've had a really successful life, an enjoying life, or whether you feel broken and just wish life itself would get to its conclusion. He's here for you whether you're young and got the whole opportunities ahead of you, or whether you're old and think perhaps they've passed by. However distant you may feel from God, God is closer than you think. I am, another good name for God, is with you. I am will not leave you. Jacob is nowhere special this morning, and he meets God, having not known that God was there. God was already there. And so the story this morning isn't about Jacob climbing up to heaven, is it? That's not the picture we get. It is not about Jacob working hard to get closer to God. He realizes his mistakes and gets them all sorted and works really hard at it and gets these rewards. Rather, it's a story of God being here, right now, in this place. The story about God coming to meet a person, the last person perhaps we might think God would come to meet, and God being with him. See, just like that picture at the beginning, God is stretching out, willing us to just recognize he's there and to respond. God is closer than we think this morning. Let's take a moment to pray before we'll invite Ruth and the musicians back to lead us in some song worship. And as we close our eyes, perhaps you just want to quietly think of who you are. Not who others think you are, that label you get, you know, whatever employment you've got, retired, in work, teacher, mom, parent. Not who you think you are, but who God knows you are. And maybe you want to think too about those locations you will find yourself in over this next week ahead. God is with you. He will not leave you. God is already here with you. And knowing that, does that transform how we look at the places, how we look at the people we'll encounter? God is with us. Our shoulders not down because of a lack of confidence, but our shoulders up because our confidence, our hope is in God, who is with us and will never leave us. So let's respond with some song worship just now.